Welcome to Native Yoga Toddcast. So happy you are here. My goal with this channel is to bring inspirational speakers to the mic in the field of yoga, massage, body work, and beyond. Follow us at Native Yoga and check us out at nativeyogacenter.com. All right, let's begin. Welcome to Native Yoga Toddcast. Today, I bring Athena Vaughn onto the channel. I do want to offer a trigger warning. Athena does speak about traumatic experiences that she has had in her life and also about how yoga has helped her heal. And you can find Athena on Instagram. It's at AuthenticallyAthenaSLC. And you're going to see that link in the show notes below. And also, you will see her website too. I think that she's going to explain everything. And thank you, Athena, for coming on, being so honest, and the clarity that you share in telling your story is just amazing. And I feel honored that you felt safe enough to share this with us. Let's begin. I'm so happy to have Athena Vaughn here today on the podcast. Athena, thank you so much for joining me today. How are you doing?
Thank you so much for having me. I'm doing really well. We just moved to a new state, so we're getting everything set up. How are you doing?
Very good. Thank you. Do you mind if I ask where you moved from and where you moved to?
Yeah. So I lived in Utah. My entire life, and we just moved up to Oregon.
Nice. What instigated the move?
Honestly, I had always wanted to move out of Utah, and I love being by the coast, but I also love the mountains, and the weather here is very different, just the change and different communities and, you know.
Yeah.
We just loved it. We came back here in December. So right during like peak rain winter season.
Yeah.
And I still loved it, even though it's super rainy. So yeah,
we decided to move here. Very cool. Where in Oregon?
I'm in Hillsboro. So it's like 30 minutes outside Portland.
Portland. Gotcha. Yeah. Nice. I've only been to the Eugene area, but it's so beautiful.
Oh, cool. It is.
Yeah. So beautiful.
It really is. Yeah. And there's so many cool parks like within walking distance that look like you're out in the mountains.
Yes. Really well, congratulations. I'm excited for your new move. That's always exciting.
Yeah. It's been great. Honestly, I've only been here since Friday. So 5 days.
You're definitely in the honeymoon phase then with Oregon, right?
We are. Yeah.
Well, that's always
we'll see how long that lasts.
Yeah. I hear you. And that's, and you're a yoga teacher, correct?
I am. Yeah.
Is that, if you were to put yourself in like a category of what you do and who you are, is yoga teacher a good category? Or is that just a part of what you do? How would you explain your work life?
Well, it's a very large part of what I do. I have found yoga to be one of the most healing experiences and containers that we can be in. And then from there, I also mentor, coach people on healing. I practice and study different psychologies and yogic philosophies. And I just kind of mix them all together.
Nice.
Except for when I'm teaching yoga. I like to keep the purity there, but I do a lot of everything in the healing world.
Very cool. Are you teaching online, or obviously you made a big move, so I wouldn't expect that you have a yoga teaching gig already lined up in Oregon, but what are your hopes and or plans in terms of how to conduct yoga classes?
So what I'm planning right now, I'm like 8 months pregnant. So I'm not currently teaching. There's a lot. I teach Kundalini yoga, and there's a lot of Kundalini that I can't practice right now for the safety of my pregnancy. Yes. So at the moment, I'm taking a little bit of a break, But when I come back into teaching, I want to teach, I like to do series. So I'll do like a 10-week series. And I myself have dealt with CPTSD, and I'm creating like a series and a support system in Kundalini yoga for those who have CPTSD and those who love someone with CPTSD and support them. So I'll do like 10-week series at a time. And it'll be, you know, a few hours where I'll use different yogic philosophies coupled with different psychology and bring them together. And then we'll do some yoga together and just make a little support group.
So, very cool. I'm not familiar with what the C stands for in front of the PTSD.
Yeah. It's in the DSM-5, but it is different than PTSD. So the C stands for complex CPTSD. And the difference is with CPTSD, this is for those who have pretty much been marinated in traumatic experiences for their entire lives. And when that happens, you know, we don't get the only nervous system we get is our survival instincts. And we will deal with the, trying to think of the right word, pregnancy brain. We will deal with the effects of the trauma and the abuse for our entire lives. Mm. But with PTSD, you can gain back your emotional equilibrium and not deal with the side effects anymore.
Wow.
So yeah, there's a little bit of a difference.
I'm so excited to have this chance to speak with you because I'm currently reading The Body Keeps the Score.
Oh yeah.
Have you heard of that or read that book?
I have read that. That was one of the first introductions I got with my CPTSD years ago. It's a good book.
It's an amazing book. And I'm just so curious to learn more about trauma-informed yoga. And I guess on that note, I mean, I hope this isn't too personal and I understand completely. You don't have to answer this question, but can you give us a little bit of insight into what caused your CPTSD?
Yeah, of course. So first of all, I was adopted. And even though there are circumstances where adoption is really great, it still presents a lot of issues for the child. Being taken away from your mother, the only source of nutrition and nurture that you have ever known, is really traumatizing. And I went to a family where there was a lot of abuse. There was a lot of neglect from parents and from older siblings. And I was just marinated in that abuse, and religious trauma came in as well. And then from there, I was also, trigger warning, sexually assaulted as a child, from a family member for years, and nothing was done about it.
Yes.
And yeah, so I was just pretty much every form of abuse a child can have happened to me in those very formative years. And it continued on even through when I became an adult. My prerogative was get out of this house. And I got into a really awful marriage and dealt with domestic violence. And that's where my first two children are from. Then we divorced and I had nowhere to go. So I had to go back to my family home.
Oh, man.
And more abuse accumulated. And and I had been in therapy for years, but it never really stuck because I was too afraid to open up about my abuse. Mm-hmm. And so then I finally did. And that's when I found yoga, and that's what helped me the very most.
Oh, wow. I mean, for you to be able to even talk about it like that has to have taken a lot of work, I'm thinking.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. There was, let's see, I think 5 years ago, I got really, really into healing myself and looking into my trauma. And for about a year and a half straight, I was having between 3 to 5 panic attacks a day. Just trying to heal.
Yeah. How often do you have panic attacks now?
I haven't really had one for a long time, actually.
Congratulations.
Anytime I can feel myself getting my nervous system dysregulating.
Yeah.
I've got a ton of coping skills, mostly through yoga, that I use to bring myself back. So
amazing. I mean, something that I hear often is people say that like talk therapy maybe had some effect, but not as big of effect as yoga and meditation has for them. Have you had a similar type of experience, or would you give equal weight to both?
I think there is a place for talk therapy for sure, and psychology, because mental health is a very real, very serious thing that we need to take care of. And as yoga teachers, you know, I'm not licensed. I can't diagnose you. If you need a medication, I can't give that to you. And for their own safety, you know, you need to, psychology has its place, but it's definitely not enough. We need to work out the emotions and the energy of those traumas out of our bodies. And the best way to do that is through a spiritual practice like yoga.
Nice. Was your first yoga class a Kundalini yoga class, or what was your very first yoga experience?
My first was actually a Vinyasa and then a Hatha. And I loved them. But when I first started yoga about 10 years ago, I wasn't necessarily doing it for the spirituality. I was definitely doing the westernized approach as it's a workout. And then, let's see, 3.5 years ago, about, I met my Kundalini yoga teacher, and, he introduced me to the spirituality aspect. And that is when all of the healing actually opened up.
Wow. So, would you say that the healing opened up, would you attribute that to the same time period that you started to speak vocally about what had happened to you? Because I think I heard you say that there was a long period of time where you weren't able to talk about it, and then there was a shift where you were able to. Was that around about the same time?
Yeah, actually, through my yoga teacher back in Utah, I met a yoga therapist, and he's also a Kundalini teacher, plus an actual psychologist. And I still see him to this day. And that's what he uses meditation in his practice and his therapy. He uses movement. We use different, sometimes he'll have me get really vocal and like scream if I need to. Yeah. And he's also a yoni therapist. So he does so many different things. And then he'll give me like meditations I can do on my own at home.
Nice.
To really help me learn how to feel, which has been incredible.
Let's assume that I've never heard of Kundalini yoga before. How do you explain it?
Ooh, so there's so many moving parts to it, but Kundalini is definitely not your mainstream yoga. It's not what you're going to see online if you were to search yoga, you know.
Yeah.
With Kundalini, we use a lot of repetition, you know, we use kriyas. So we use repetitive movements, and those repetitive movements actually help you regulate your nervous system. They trigger you into your fight or flight response, and then we come and we rest and we trigger ourselves back and learn how to move into our parasympathetic response system, which is your calm, your regulated system, and you go back and forth. And so you're learning how to switch back between the two. And it really helps. It's also considered the yoga of energy. So we're using every single chakra. A lot of different lineages I've noticed focus really heavily on the heart, throat, third eye, and crown chakras, which are beautiful chakras, but they kind of leave the bottom three hanging. And so in Kundalini Shakti being, you know, part of your lower centers, we use that energy the entire time. And so we are balancing our lower three, and that's usually where most of our trauma is held as well. Mm. So Kundalini is extremely effective for those who have trauma.
Nice.
Or addiction.
Very cool. I mean, I have a ton of questions for you. You made mention that because you're pregnant, that you've needed to stop practice, your Kundalini yoga practice. Can you explain why?
So I haven't had to stop all of it. It's just when you were pregnant, you, like I said, we work out our lower three chakras a lot. And so that's a lot of abs. And when you're pregnant, you really want to keep your abs loose because your belly needs to grow and expand. And you're also going to be pushing out a baby. So you really want to strengthen your legs and your pelvic floor muscles and leave your belly to be calm and relaxed. Yes. So I've just had to switch a few things around. Some of the poses I just can't do because it's not safe and it hurts your stomach and it could put you into labor, like breath of fire. You can't do breath of fire or you could start contractions. So
yes,
there's just a few things I've had to omit.
That makes sense. I just taught a gentle yoga class right before this podcast. And I had a woman who was 8 months pregnant, and I love it when moms come in, and I think it's amazing to watch. And I think like learning to do the modifications and watch the modifications. And I feel like we have two children. So my wife practiced yoga all throughout her pregnancy. And so I've gotten a chance to, you know, watch her and then the chance to work with women and watch them. And I love just seeing like what type of natural modifications are made. If there's a few like prerequisite ingredients though, what would you advise somebody who's either thinking about becoming pregnant or currently pregnant and thinking, wow, I'd love to try yoga?
I would definitely say it depends on their workout routine. If you have been very active before you're pregnant or when you're newly pregnant, then really before about 17 weeks, you're fine. In Kundalini, we have a belief that the soul of the baby doesn't necessarily drop into your body until week 17 or the 120th day. Oh, wow. And up until that point, you can pretty much keep your practice the same. And then at that point, you'll notice the quickening, which is the baby dropping in. And that's when you need to switch it up. But it depends on your workout and how active you've been, because you don't want to be straining your body. You don't want to do any inversions. And you don't want to do any breath of fire, because those could cause a miscarriage. So, you know, just be safe.
Yeah,
that's it. And just listen to your body. Really listen and tune into your body. If you're feeling any pain, stop, sit down, get some water and rest. And then it just kind of is a touch and go.
Yeah. Great advice. Thank you.
Yeah.
When you made mention of after your divorce and then you needed to move back into your adoptive family, and you brought your children, what type of experience was like that? Like that made me, that was just hard for me to just hear that in a way, just feeling for you, like in the sense of like, oh my gosh, that must've been so challenging. But at the same time, if you're a mom and you have two children, you need some type of stable environment or some type of environment period to, you know, obviously keep the process going. Can you shed a little bit of light on what that was actually like for you?
I was already so traumatized anyways, but it was definitely like re-traumatizing, because it was like, I'd finally gotten away from that and knowing what I was going into and worried that it would happen to my own kids. Yeah. So I moved into an even more vigilant state where I was never resting. I really didn't get any sleep. My mental health really deteriorated even more. Because I was so watchful of my kids and wasn't sure what was going to happen. And yeah, no, that was honestly probably worse than living there myself, because they're your babies. You know, you have these little ones that you birthed, you grew, you love more than anything. And you're like, great, we have to go into an abusive home, because if not, we'll be on the street. Yes. And that's my choice right now. Yes. Yeah.
Man, I'm so happy for you, Athena, that you've been able to get out of that.
Me too. Thank you.
That's amazing.
It was a really big step. Luckily, they were a lot nicer to my kids than they were to me, but they still undermined me as a parent a lot.
Yeah.
So it was really difficult. There's a lot of fighting because I was like, okay, well, I'm the parent, you know, and they wanted to be the parent. I was like, well, you're not. So,
yeah. What was the experience like when you left their house to this last time and you took the kids? Was there a struggle or was it like in the middle of the night type situation, or was it a situation where you could speak about it, plan, and make a move?
I actually planned it with my therapist. Wow. I had told him for years, like, I want to get out of this house. I want to go no contact with all of them. And I want to go to a safe place. And that's what I'm working towards. And so he helped me get emotionally ready because there was so much gaslighting. It was really hard for me to be like, am I being over dramatic? Am I the crazy one? You know, am I everything that they say I am? And so we did a ton of work to heal my subconscious mind from them. And then from there, what happened was I met my now husband, and we slowly started moving in together. I wanted my kids to have an adjustment period because all they've known was grandma and grandpa's house. And then eventually I was able to go no contact, and my husband and his oldest son actually went to my parents' house and got mine and my kids' things and brought them back to his place. And then I never talked to them again.
Yeah. Well done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good adjustment period.
I have some experience in the realm of what you're talking about, personal experience as well. So even just hearing you talk about it, I have to admit it triggers the wrong word because I'm okay right now. But do you have a similar experience? I mean, you're doing such a great job talking about it, and not like, you just seem calm. So that's pretty amazing. But I have to admit,
it's
like,
a
lot of breathing. Okay, I'll take
a deep breath. A lot of breathing. That's the trick.
Yeah. And so in your process of working with other people, can you share maybe a story or two about what the process of helping others that might be going through it is helping you as well?
You know, the whole reason I've wanted to teach and help other people through their own traumas since I was about 16. So that's when I started studying psychology, even just on my own, because it helped me understand what was going on and what was happening to me and understanding the people that I was around.
Yeah.
And so I've been really passionate about it for a really long time. And a lot of my sessions, when I start talking to someone, I like to do it on Zoom because I like to see them, is I start by watching them breathe. Because when you are dysregulated, your breath is very shallow and it's all up here in your throat and in your chest. And if you watch them, it's an indicator like, oh, they're dysregulated, they're triggered, they are hypervigilant. You know, they're not in a window of tolerance. And then, you know, I just ask a lot of open-ended questions and I listen, and there's little keywords that you'll notice with people who have been through especially intense trauma. And from there, you can start building, oh, okay, so this is kind of what happened. And a lot of times people don't realize that it was abuse. They think it was so normal because for us, it was normal, you know, like for us, getting neglected is our normal. For us, having parents or older siblings beat you up is normal. You know, you don't realize that it's not okay. So you just really have to listen to those key phrases that they'll tell you.
Can you give an example of like what an open-ended question means, and or one that you might?
So open-ended is just, especially like when they're telling you a story, let's say that they're sharing a traumatic experience and they completely shut down. You're just asking, what did that feel like for you? What did that look like for you in that moment? What did you do in that moment? And then they'll be able to take themselves into that moment and tell you what happened, what they did. You know, you try to keep all the focus off of the abuser, off of the person that hurt them, and bring it onto them so that they can get a new perspective of the experience.
Nice. Can you explain and or help me understand if what a trauma-informed yoga class looks like to you currently with all the experience you've had?
Yeah. Personally, I'm not a teacher that likes to teach every single week because I would much rather have a series of longer classes where I am able to actually dive into what the trauma and how it shows up in our lives is. So for me, it's taking the approach of different chakras sometimes. And then other times I will dive into different body systems because trauma has a very profound impact on our nervous system, on our endocrine system, our circulatory system, on every system of our body, and our digestive system is huge. So, you know, I like to dive into, okay, sometimes trauma will show up like GI issues. You know, you could have IBS. You could have a really hard time eating certain foods. You could have insomnia really bad. Trauma shows up physically. And that is something they can connect to. You know, it puts it in their head like, oh my gosh, yeah, I have these issues. Like that could, and it's unexplainable. You know, I've been to all these doctors and nothing helps. You know, they put me on all these medications that kind of do something, but not really, you know, and again, never tell anybody to get on the medication. But from there, you can build little kriyas and meditations that they can do that hit those places of their body and will help them balance them.
Nice. Amazing. Yeah. In relation to like the first chakra, what's something that you would, like, obviously that's our Muladhara chakra and yes. This is going to be our like base instincts and our within the realm of like survival and fight or flight. Is there, say, for example, if you were able to observe in a student that they're having some challenges with these sort of psychological elements, and then you said a kriya that could like address that particular body part, can you elaborate a little further as to maybe what that could mean?
Yeah. So essentially, again, the Muladhara chakra is about survival. So that actually really has to do with our sympathetic nervous system. And it's also for elimination. You know, it eliminates toxicity in our bodies. So for that chakra, you're going to want to do kriyas for Kundalini, kriyas of meditations that have to do with elimination and that have to do with, goodness, I almost said menstruation, wrong one, that have to do with our metabolism. You want to work on your metabolism. And there's a lot of really good kriyas for those. I'm trying to think of a name right now for one, but there's so many. There's one that's just literally like kriya for metabolism. And that is a great one to practice.
What is that? What is that practice?
So it has a lot of different interesting moves. A lot of it is going to be strengthening your legs and using Mulbandh, because that's your pelvic floor. So you really want to tighten up your whole pelvic floor and use Mulbandh a lot and really strengthen that. And you're going to be bending and again, strengthening up your legs. And that is going to affect your Muladhara chakra.
Do you try to keep some sort of mental visualization on the emotions surrounding fight or flight and or survival? Yes. Or is it something that you just let that go and just do the physical aspect and let things, the dust settle? Or is it a combined effort of?
I always give options because ultimately I am just here to provide an experience for them. But the experience is completely up to what they want to do. So sometimes I'll say, you know, hey, we're working on a Muladhara chakra today and go through the list of what it can do, of the traumas that can live there, how we can relate to it, the color, everything. And I'll say, you know, it's really great to either focus on the Muladhara chakra during this practice. You can do that by imagining, you know, a glowing red light at the base of your spine, or, you know, really sit in between each exercise or asana practice. We sit for about 20 seconds. And during those times, I'll say, just feel, notice what you're feeling. If it's frustration, if you're pissed off at me, then be pissed off. If you're mad about a situation, be mad. If you need to scream, I want you to scream. If you need to cry, cry. You know, just whatever it is you're feeling, give yourself permission to dive in, and I'll hold you. Energetically, I will hold you. Nice. But it's up to them.
Yeah.
They don't have to do any of that, or they can do that. It's their experience.
Have you had a situation where you're teaching and or leading this type of work and have a situation get out of hand where you're in underwater or over your head with maybe, you know, I guess if somebody has experienced trauma, they're unaware of it and or they're starting to become aware of it, then all of a sudden they start doing this work and it might feel maybe for them that it's intensified. Have you had any like situations where you felt like, uh-oh, I didn't know this was going to happen or not?
Yes.
Yes. Right. You're like,
healing
yes.
trauma is intense.
Okay.
I've even been that person where it gets so intense because the pain hurts so bad. And what I learned from my teachers and from my teaching experiences is during those times, you know, you really want to focus your energy on helping them heal and calm down with love energy. Just send it their way, get them some tissues, and then have them stop.
Yeah.
And never send them on their way ever. Not when they're in that state. It's so dangerous for them. So just have them sit, have them stop and keep going. And then after the class, just talk to them and hold space.
Got it.
And then help them calm down. And you can do that through just simple breathing. You can do it through, you know, always ask, like, would you like a hug? Because a lot of people with trauma don't want to be touched. Yeah. So just ask, you know, if it seems okay, but be careful with the boundaries of a teacher, you know, and just talk to them.
Yeah.
Help them calm down. And then once they've calmed down, you know, I like to build them up, you know, like you did a lot of work. And I'm sorry that it hurts that bad. That's normal. There's nothing wrong with you. You're doing beautiful. You're worthy of this. You're completely deserving. You know, I believe you. I believe your story. I believe whatever. And just build them up and talk them up about what a great job that they did. And, you know, if they come back, they come back. If they don't, they don't.
Yeah.
But at least you left them in a good experience and in a good state.
Nice. If I'm a new yoga teacher, I am listening to this conversation going, whoa, nobody talked about that during my teacher training. And I don't know what I would do if I was in a situation where something like this happened. Do you think that like in a regular cyclic or classic public class, maybe at a gym or like not even like a not in a dedicated yoga space, but in a situation like where you said you first started practicing yoga, like in the vinyasa, where maybe your initial intention was for body culture, you know, to like either get strong or sometimes people are thinking maybe I'll lose weight and all that sort of stuff. But then that you have this switch where you start to understand the more the connection between the mind, the body and the spiritual is, do you think that people that have experienced trauma that maybe aren't aware of it are going to come in touch with that with your classic, say, body culture yoga? Or does that not typically happen until you're in these more trauma-informed base classes where the doorway is opened up?
They could. A lot of times what happens with trauma healing, and sometimes we don't even recognize that we've been doing trauma or regulating our nervous system. Usually, like for instance, when I moved in with my now husband, I finally got to a safe place, and so did my kids. And we all slept for like a month. straight, pretty much. We were exhausted.
Wow.
Because your nervous system finally regulates. So if people are not in touch with what's happening, they don't realize that, oh, wow, like I'm feeling better. So then they're like, I want to go to yoga. Like I feel really good now. They could come into contact with more, because once our nervous systems begin to calm and regulate, that's usually when repressed memories are like, hi, I'm going to come in now and you're going to remember me because you can handle it. Yeah. So they could have that happen in a class.
Yep. What would you recommend to someone who's a brand new teacher, that if they are looking around the room, what are telltale signs that there's potential that somebody is not in touch with trauma and or might need special attention? Like a fidgety, a unable to look you in the eyes, are there any like specific signs that when you see it, you go, ooh, that was me, or I really see what they're going through? Or is there anything that you can advise there?
Yeah. If you're looking at your students and watching them, you will see no eye contact for sure. Fidgety with their hands, their breathing will come back up into their chest and they won't be able to relax any muscles. Cause you know, with yoga, we learn how to relax different muscles, but they'll tense, you know, they'll really like tense up like into a little bit of a ball, and they'll be breathing heavy up in their chest. And those are definite signs that, oh, something's going on. They may need to take a break, and that's okay. Just talk to them.
Yeah.
Have them sit down, get some water in them for sure. Take care of them, you know, have them sit and just breathe. I usually say long, deep breathing to calm them down. Or one of my favorite breaths is actually the straw breath. It's one that EMTs use, and it's where you breathe in long and deep through your nose. And then as you exhale through your mouth even slower, as if you're blowing through a straw. So I have them use that one, and it calms you down really quick.
Nice.
And just have them sit.
Nice. Until they feel better. Great advice. Thank you so much. Have you had any experiences where you've had some sort of physical pain in your body, or what seemed like you made a list of different types of things, like say IBS or insomnia or maybe chronic headaches or something of that nature? Have you had any physical ailments that you thought, there's no way this could have anything to do with my state of mind? This has to be like a legit disease situation that's like irrelevant to my thinking processes. I'm never going to get better. And then you got better and you made a connection between that body reaction to the either unprocessed trauma or the process of processing trauma, where you then made that connection. Have you had any of those experiences before?
Yeah, actually I have. I've had insomnia before, really bad. IBS. I had a phase where I could not process any meat at all. My body would hurt so bad, gluten intolerance, and ovarian cysts for no reason, but they were bad. I would get about 9 at a time and have them all rupture. I would be in the hospital. And I didn't have PCOS and I didn't have endometriosis. And so the doctors, the specialists I saw, were essentially telling me I had bad luck while ovulating, and that's all they had.
Yeah.
So, but then once I started diving into my trauma and making the connections with holistic healing through yoga, all of that went away.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah.
And when you were going through it, did you think there's no way this could just be unprocessed trauma?
Yes, because that's what we're taught essentially, is that if you have physical pains or these issues, you go see a doctor, you know. But every specialist I had been to could not give me any explanation for why, or nothing would help. And I was tired of all the medications. I was tired of seeing specialists and nothing was helping.
Where do you think we draw the line then? If there's, you know, say I have like, you know, an earache and I go and I get some antibiotics and it clears up. Mm-hmm. I mean, do you believe or do you think that surely there has to be some disease and or pain that is unrelated to trauma?
Absolutely. Yeah. There always is. You know, you can always get sick.
Okay. Yeah.
Absolutely. I think modern medicine has its place for sure. And I don't feel like they should be separated because they're pretty much one and the same. You know, sometimes it is an energetic and traumatic state, and other times you're just sick.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Good point. Do you think it's tricky to draw the line in relation to, like, so you may mention, like, say somebody, a student's practicing and they have like tension in their body and their breathing is up in their throat and or upper chest, that they, like, say somebody just had a stressful day and they're tight and they're stressed out. Where do we draw the line between someone that just had a stressful day and they're tight and someone who has legitimately suffered severe trauma?
Honestly, I don't know if there's, I just treat them the same.
Yeah.
Because it's impossible to know. You know, if I don't know you, I'm not going to know that you had a really bad day.
Yeah.
So I just treat it the same. You know, if they're really struggling in the class, have them sit down, do some deep breathing with them. And for the most part, if it's just stress, they'll get back up.
Yeah.
And they'll keep going. If it's trauma, they're going to sit and they're not going to move. And they're going to be so dysregulated that they cannot move. They're going to go into a disassociative state.
Got it.
And that's kind of a tall sign. It's like, oh, there's the difference. But essentially, you just treat it the same.
Did you ever as a kid have someone tell you that you're disassociating? Was there?
No.
Is that funny? Because
no.
Because what? There was no... Like, were you ever brought to therapy? Would anyone take you to therapy when you were in that abusive environment? Or was you?
Yeah, actually, I did. So from it, I actually had anorexia and I passed out at school because they hadn't eaten so long.
Can I ask how old you were? Like, what stage?
Where I was 13.
13.
13.
Oh,
it was Tina. So awful. And
gosh, so what,
the crazy thing is, like, my family didn't notice. they didn't notice I was wasting away. And so after that, I got put in an institution.
Whoa.
Because I was so sick. And I started therapy, but I was so afraid to tell my therapist what was going on at home. And so she had no clue what I was experiencing, because I was so terrified, because I knew when I get out of here, I'm going back, and I need to survive this. So if I tell them, I won't survive being at home again. So I just have to shut up and whatever they say goes.
Whoa. That's pretty intense. Do you think that, I guess, what would be a proper terminology for me to label those that you feel like were the ones that were abusing you, your abusers, your parents? I mean, what do you think? What is the preferred way for me to address them?
I just call them the abusers.
Thank you.
Yeah, I don't even call them by their, I don't even call them mom or dad.
Sorry to tiptoe around that. I just wanted to know, like, what's appropriate.
No, you're good.
And do you think they were scared that you were going to talk when you were in that treatment facility? Do you think that they were in one part of themselves aware that they were abusive? Do you think they were so abused themselves perhaps when they were younger that they were completely unaware of what they were doing? Now that you look back on it, can you make any sense out of that?
I think it's a mix, because as I've gotten older, I've noticed that they also have a lot of mental health issues. They do. There's a lot there. So they have their own issues, and that projects onto everybody around them. But there was also a part of them that you can tell was conscious about it because of the way they'd smile after hurting you. It was like a sadistic, I'm happy I just hurt you kind of thing, you know? So you can tell they were somewhat consciously aware, but also like delusional themselves.
Yeah.
And living in a different world where that didn't happen.
Yeah.
And what they were doing was okay.
Wow. What was the next experience after what you had happened when you were 13? That was the big alarm bell. Was there another one? Because surely you didn't just go in, come out, and then, oh, okay, everything's going to be okay. Now I'm, you know, was there another big wake up call for them and or you?
I don't know if they've ever had a wake up call. I knew something was wrong for a very long time.
Yep.
And after I got out of that institution, it was more just, they had drugged me up on so many medications that I didn't need. And because I didn't tell them what was going on at home, there was no way to properly diagnose me. You know, they could not understand what was going on with me. The doctors were just as confused. You know, they were all lost. So, but they did put me on a lot of different medications. Yeah. And one of my parents is very medication happy, a little bit too much. So they were fine with that. But what happened was it just clouded my mind so much that I started fawning, you know, and just kind of doing what they said.
Yeah.
Because I realized I'm not getting out of here. And so I'm just going to do what they say. And I'm just going to, you know, abandon myself and just wait until I can get out.
Yep. Wow. Holy cow. That's intense, Athena.
Yeah.
I'm so thankful for you to be this honest with me. I know we're both, this is my first chance to get to meet you. And you're being kind enough to join me here. And I'm amazed at how it seems to me easily you're able to share this. And that's a big deal. It seems like I can feel that you've obviously processed a lot of this. Do you feel like you're in a space where, like, can you feel that too? Are you proud of yourself?
Extremely.
Yeah.
Extremely. I've been able to get to a place where it's like, bad things happen, you know, they don't really have much of an effect on me anymore. And if sharing my own story can help other people make sense of theirs, then that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah. That's so amazing. And you said that you think, that is amazing. I have had a chance to speak with other people that have had really challenging situations like this. And I know how big of a deal it is to be able to say what you're saying. So I really do appreciate your honesty. Thank you.
Well, thank you. It's a good space to be able to talk about it. So
I guess for me, another thought, thank you for being patient with me, is as a parent myself, how do you relate to raising kids and watching them and then maybe wondering about the time that they were around your abusers? How do you process all that now? How do you kind of feel okay with everything and deal and move forward with that?
Well, again, taking you back to just psychology, it's really easy for me to see, you know, my kids are 8 and 6. And from a brain development standpoint, I understand where they are at. You know, their brains haven't even fully formed yet, you know, like their right and left hemispheres haven't even fused together. So right now, you know, it's very different because I get it. I know where they're at. And I just try to connect to them through, hey, how are you feeling? Like, we don't see grandma and grandpa. How are you doing with that? Are you angry with me? You can be angry with me for taking you away. That's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Are you sad? I want you to be sad, you know, and I'll help you through it. And it's really just getting them to talk about their feelings and put a name to it.
Yep.
And the more I heal and regulate my own nervous system, the better I am at helping them do the same. So it's really just what I learn and apply to myself. I kind of just apply it to them at an age appropriate state.
Nice. Great answer. I saw on your bio on your website that you have studied and or practiced polyvagal theory. Can you explain to us, please?
I love polyvagal theory. Oh my goodness. I'm such a nerd for it. So polyvagal theory, we are working with the vagus nerve. And our vagus nerve is the longest nerve in our body. It comes from our head all the way down to our bellies. And so it actually affects your stomach, any GI issues, anything down there. It'll affect your heart health, your throat, everywhere, your brain, your headaches, things like that. It'll affect. And our vagus nerve, there's three different states we can talk about. So we've got dorsal vagal, which is like the bottom of a little ladder. Dorsal vagal is the back of the vagus nerve. And that is like where we are completely disassociated. It's sort of like when a possum rolls over and plays dead, you know, you just can't do anything. So when you're in that state, you're completely shut down. And then we go up into our sympathetic. And your sympathetic nervous system is your survival. So your fight, flight, fawn, freeze, those. And we do need that state, obviously. Like if we are about to get in a car crash, we need quick movement to stop, right? And that's your survival instinct kicking in. And then we have ventral vagal at the very top. And this is where we are able to process, where we are able to respond appropriately to the situations, and we're able to calm ourselves down. It's like the slow break, you know, it's like the pause. And with polyvagal theory, what you're learning how to do is move yourself up the ladder to ventral vagal over and over again. Because the more you practice moving from dorsal or sympathetic into your ventral vagal, then your ventral vagal is going to become normal for you. And it takes time. But essentially, that's what we're doing, is we're just giving ourselves safety and connection to ourselves and to our life and the world around us that we didn't get before.
Nice. Do you feel like yoga is a tradition that was aware of the vagus nerve on either a deep or subconscious level, and that all the practices were pretty much around this regulation process? Is there anything that the polyvagal theory brings to the table that the yoga field might have missed out on?
Yes. They knew 100%. If they didn't have the verbalization of it, they knew what they were doing. And this is for every single lineage of yoga. Think about it. When you are doing an intense yoga flow and you're breathing through it, that is you being in an intense survival mode, but breathing yourself into a ventral vagal system, into calming yourself down.
Yeah.
So in yoga, you are constantly moving between the two the entire time, no matter what lineage you practice. That's what you're doing.
That's cool.
Yeah.
When is the last time that you've had a dorsal vagal experience? Being able to go into a, what was there? Is dorsal, what's the middle?
That's the shutdown.
Dorsal, the middle is the ventral, or this top is the ventral? So can you remind me?
No, ventral is the very tip top. That's your where you're processing and you're safe.
Yep.
Then you have sympathetic, which is the fight or flight.
Yeah.
And then you have dorsal, which is completely like an animal playing dead. You can't move.
When's the last time you had a dorsal experience?
Actually, last year I had a repressed memory come up.
Wow.
And it completely shut me down. And I had to go back into some really intensive therapy for that one.
Wow.
That's what I'm saying. Like, when you get somewhere safe and your nervous system regulates, those repressed memories, that's when they creep back up, because it knows that you're able to handle it.
Yeah. I was watching a show on HBO called The 100-Foot Wave, which is about a famous pro surfer named Garrett McNamara. And he, you know, is attempting to surf the largest wave in the world. And it takes place off the coast of Portugal at a place called Nazaré, where they have these massive waves. And so they were just starting to analyze a little bit about, like, well, why would someone do this? Like, why would someone put them in this really dangerous environment to try to, you know, be challenged in that way? And then they went back into his childhood a little bit, and they showed some of the stuff that he had to go through. And it's like, interesting, you know, like the, and he made mention that I feel like I have these memories that are on hard drives that are so far back there that I can't access that information. And when I heard that, I thought, that's a really interesting way to look at it, you know, like, or just the thought, because we can relate to computers maybe nowadays. Do you have any other insights into how that works? And obviously you've experienced that, like, that's incredible that you have this, you know, like, where you were in a safe space and you just got floored again and had to go into therapy to kind of process some of that memory. Can you give us any more insight into what that experience is like? And, or what if I want to access that deep stuff that I'm wondering, is it there? Is there something that we can do that's going to help us to get there?
Yeah. First of all, I would suggest really working on regulating your nervous system, really working with the polyvagal theory and working with your vagus nerve. And there's so many different ways to do that. Mm-hmm. I would really suggest, first of all, getting a strong foundation with healing and regulating yourself. And meditation is actually a very, very beautiful tool, because meditation will help you access your subconscious. So when you're meditating, you know, what can happen if you just, you know, if you're doing it long enough or whatever, however long it takes you, doing it over and over and over again, keep practicing, eventually you're going to have, you know, feelings and thoughts come in and out, and you can track those thoughts. And I also love to use what I call life cycles and mind mapping, where I will break my life up into chunks and look at who I was around at that time, where I was living, prominent people in my life, and look at the thoughts or what they said to me, what they said about me, what beliefs that created for me, and any big events or just even small events that happened, because that'll show you where your trauma is. And from there, that opens up a doorway for your subconscious to start to come through. Mm. And that's what you got to do. You know, there's tons of different doorways that you can use to open things. And so it's really good to have a well-rounded either therapist or a well-rounded mentor or coach or teacher who can give you all these different ways to access what you want. And eventually one of those doorways is going to open you up, and then you just want to roll with it.
Yeah. Very cool. Can you talk a little bit about if myself and or the listener would like to work with you, how do we do that?
So currently, because I'm super pregnant, but
I'm super pregnant right now. So just give me a little time.
Exactly. I get through the birth and the healing, then I'm going to open up my space again for one-on-one clients where I can help. And we'll do like a mentorship for at least 4 to 6 months. You can always add on more. Or, you know, if you're in Oregon, you can find me teaching at some point after the birth. But right now I have a self-study course. It's called Your Reclamation. And it's actually the perfect step for someone who wants to begin this process. We go through, it's about, I chunked it in by weeks. So it's 8 weeks long. You can do it since it's self-study. You can take as long as you need to. That's what I love about self-studies. But we will go through in depth your nervous system, polyvagal, your subconscious, life map and mind mapping, body mapping. We'll map your trauma in here and physically. And there's a lot of information. And on top of that, I have worksheets on there that I created. I have little tables that you can use and print off so that you can figure out which sympathetic state you're in. If you're in fight, flight, stuff like that, we'll go into great detail about each one and ways to help bring yourself out of them. I've got 60 trauma-informed affirmations that you can begin to use. We'll work with your inner critic. We work with your inner child. We work with your wounded inner teen. And I have tons of meditations on there that you can use. It's a lot. That's why I'm saying take it slow. Because this your reclamation is just jam-packed with everything that you're going to need to get started. So
is this a, a digital course as well. That's on
I recorded it, so you'll see me. And I just talk, and I broke it down into chunks. So even though it's a lot of information, I did simplify it. And then I'm also giving resources for trauma specialists, like real psychologists and psychiatrists, from where I got a lot of my own studies. And then, yeah, so it's a mix of psychology, polyvagal theory, nervous system regulation, and spiritual practices that can help you heal and move the energy out of your body. So it's everything amazing. Blended.
That's incredible, Athena. How long did it take you? Obviously, this is your life's work, but from the day that you decided this is what I'm going to do, how long did it take you to put all that together?
A while. A few months.
Okay.
Yeah. Because I knew what I wanted. And I was like, I got to break this up, make it bite-sizable, make it digestible.
Yeah.
So I wrote out what I wanted to say each week and then looked it over again, edited it, broke it down a little bit easier. So even though it's like, it's a lot of information, it's very easy. And I leave room for, you know, whoever is in the course to do their own research as well and give them the resources to do so. Because I think it's really important to also not just, you know, take a course, but to also do your own research.
Have you had a testimonial of someone that went through it and called you or wrote you and said, wow, thank you?
Yeah, actually I have. She's amazing. She's been doing a lot better in her life, and she actually wants to work with me again in a little while, do another mentorship as well on top
Very
of
cool.
it.
Cool. That's got to feel really good.
It does. It does. And, you know, I try really hard to keep what people say private to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
As well as when I'm in a space with others and I'm teaching, you know, make sure that everything is, I just view these healing containers as very sacred. So I do try to keep what they say private, but it's all been really good feedback.
Very cool. This time went by so fast, Athena, and I feel like I could keep going, but I want to respect your space and the attempt to start to steer us toward closing our session together. Is there anything that I might have missed out on in asking you about? Is there anything else that comes to mind that you are wanting to share?
No, nothing's coming to mind. I think we pretty much covered it. You know, the trauma, the nervous system regulation, how to help yourself and other teachers, you know, giving them a little bit of guidance.
Yeah.
That's about it. I think we did that's a really cool. good job.
Oh man. I mean, I was so excited. When I got a chance to chat with you via email very briefly before we met up, you know how you can just kind of feel from someone just on a really quick email, even like that. Basically, long story short, I was excited to meet with you. You were very kind, very sweet in our email correspondence. So, and like that's just kind of like a feeling that happens. Do you know what I mean? Like it's. Yeah. So I was excited for today. I was like, I can't wait to get this chance to actually meet you. And it's even been better than what I hoped. And I feel like you're extremely clear and very thoughtful. And I can tell that you've gone through some stuff, but the way that you've been able to just explain all that and communicate it is pretty amazing. So I'm really thankful for this opportunity. And I really appreciate you taking time out of your day. I know you're busy, a lot going on, and I'm so excited that you're in a safe space and a brand new move in a beautiful part of the country. Oregon is so amazing. So I'm just really happy for you, Athena. I'm excited for you. I can't wait to see what evolves for you here.
Thank you so much. I was really excited as well when you reached out. Your yoga studio and how long you guys have been teaching together is really inspiring. You and your wife.
Oh,
I love
thank
it.
You, Athena. Thank you. Well, we'll just keep going here. I mean, I think the world could go through some sort of healing phase where maybe we can minimize these sort of challenges somehow if we speak openly like you did. So I don't
agree
think,
with that.
I think this is a push forward. This is a
move forward. Of these topics are taboo, you know, and like people don't want to talk about it. I'm like, how are we going to help other people feel less alone and less victimized if we don't stand up and talk about it?
Yeah, that's a good point.
You know, like it's not a fun topic, but it happens every day.
Yeah.
So it's something that needs to be spoken about and also something that needs to be guided through. You know, you've got to guide other people and help other people, and then that's going to have a ripple effect.
That's a good point. Do you think, like, say, in the process of me putting the message out about this podcast, that it is a good idea or an unnecessary idea to say, be warned, this topic is challenging? Or do you think, no, don't do that? Like, just put it out there. Do you know what I mean? Like, obviously, if someone started listening, they're like, whoa, this is way heavier than I was expecting. I just wanted a rosy walk down the sidewalk. You know, they'll turn it off, right? So, mm-hmm. I mean, is there a need to preface, like, be warned, everybody, some of the things that you're about to hear? Or like, what do you think about that? I don't know that it matters, but it did cross my mind a little bit during our conversation. Yeah. Like, I wonder if I should let people know, like, Athena's about to share some challenging stuff that might be challenging for you to hear. You know, like when we're watching a TV show and they're like, get ready, you're watching the news, some of the images you're about to see. And I think that's probably important too, right? Like that, like if kids are watching, we want to let them know. Yeah. And I always mark all of my podcasts. I check the explicit box, like even if you don't say a bad word or like just to like, okay, if there's kids, like this is what we're talking about might be something that we want to just like, you know, parent it or, you know, make sure they're aware of what they're getting into. Any thoughts around that?
Yeah. I usually do put a trigger warning, but I also feel like it's important to try and take the fear out of the trigger.
Yeah. I guess that's what I was trying to figure out. Yeah.
Yeah. It's good to put it out there because some people may not be ready to hear. However, there's really nothing, there shouldn't be a fear surrounding talking about it. You know, I usually just like a trigger warning, talking about trauma, you know, different various dramas. And it's usually about it. Except for with the sexual abuse, that's where I actually put like trigger warning. We're talking like sexual abuse is brought up.
Yeah.
I know how hard that would be.
Okay. Good point.
But, you know,
thank you for that advice.
Not like I close the details. So,
yeah.
At the same time, it's like no details were actually shared. It's just mentioned. So, a mention of this. Oh, that is a loud train.
I'm heard so that. Sorry. I know I'm not real close to the train tracks here, but I was like, well, I wonder if I am all of a sudden. Like,
yeah, I know that was loud. I'm not used to that.
Right. Hopefully that doesn't go off at 3 o'clock in the morning tonight.
I haven't noticed quite yet. We'll see.
Oh man. Well, Athena, thank you so much. I can't wait to, get a chance to work with you and continue to watch your journey. So, I really appreciate this.
No, thank you so much. I really appreciate being on here. It was great. I loved it. Thank you.
Thank you. Native Yoga Toddcast is produced by myself. The theme music is dreamed up by Bryce Allen. If you like this show, let me know. If there's room for improvement, I want to hear that too. We are curious to know what you think and what you want more of, what I can improve. And if you have ideas for future guests or topics, please send us your thoughts to info@nativeyogacenter. You can find us at nativeyogacenter.com. And hey, if you did like this episode, share it with your friends, rate it and review, and join us next time.